Welcome to The Lob, your home of in-depth coverage and analysis by These Football Times, a movement of journalism you can trust. Each week, we endeavour to bring you the very best coverage of the game, exploring stories from the past and present with analysis by expert guests from around the world. Find more of our award-winning content online and in print. In the meantime, enjoy the podcast.
Hello and welcome to part four now of Mount Rushmore, Gary's wonderful idea of chronicling four of the greatest players from one particular club. So far, I think Newcastle, Everton, Celtic, is it so far,
yep,
Gary?
Yep, that's it. That'll do. Yes, I had to resharpen my chisel after the Celtic one because... there was Billy McNeil. God, he ought to chisel because he's all about.
No, you've been busy. I have been busy. Chiseling away this summer. Looking forward to this one, Gary.
Yeah, another great club with so many great players, and it's interesting when you look at teams that we've spoken about so far. Some positions there are two or three options, and some there's 28. And this fits in bang into that because some of the choices we've got here. Tottenham have been a top club for all of my lifetime. So many great players to discuss on the past, and interesting to consider, Tom's choices.
Yeah, I think they're one of those clubs, Stephen, where you could almost pick a player per era or maybe even per decade. The club like Tottenham, they've had, as Gary said, some great names.
Oh, but now, teams of the 60s, 70s and 80s, into the 90s, every decade, no matter what they're doing, they always seem to funnel up a whole set of new heroes and players that, tend to be, greatly admired across the board, no matter which team you support. They're one of those teams that just garner a lot of respect and a little bit of a soft spot for a lot of people, I think.
So, certainly the team from the 80s.
Will and Chris aside, yeah.
Yeah, well, yeah, maybe they've switched off by now, but maybe not. Maybe they'll see it through, but we'll see. Obviously, we have a special guest who has to make the selection. Luckily, it's not down to us three to make the selection. We just pass comment, really, and judgment. So no pressure, Tom. We just pass comment and judgment on the selections that have been made. And as you can see, tonight's guest is Mr. Tom Scholes, and he is picking the four players for Tottenham Hotspur. Welcome, Tom.
Hello. Thank you for having me. It's always a pleasure to talk about the Premier Club at the moment in North London. So I'm going to get that in while I can. There probably isn't going to be that many opportunities in the future to say it, or probably before this, actually. But I always take the opportunity to remind people what colour North London is at the moment. But no, it's good to be here. I always enjoy doing these podcasts. It is a little bit different to be able to see myself this time. It's a little bit unnerving, to be perfectly honest, because I'm used to every time we've chatted and every time we spoke to one another, I can just do whatever I wish. I can look at whatever I do, but now I actually have to pay attention to what's going on around me, and it's a little bit strange, but it's perfectly okay. I can put that to one side because I am talking about the mighty Tottenham Hotspur.
Well, I had a crew cut when lockdown started. That's how long we've been doing this for. So, just before we start getting to your first sort of choice, then, just how difficult was it to pick these four players, one from every position? So the goalkeeper, defender, midfielder, and striker was what we were looking for. How difficult was it to do?
Well, the club has a distinct history of having a lot of really, really, as we mentioned just beforehand, really like genuinely superb and historic players. But I wanted to make it a little bit different, a little bit more relevant to myself. So if you were to pick every player that has ever played for Tottenham, then yes, it would have been a difficult choice to pick from. We've had so many great strikers that to pick just one is very difficult. But for example, I don't think it is fair for me to pick Jimmy Greaves as my top striker because, given my age, it is not a fair assessment. Now, if there was somebody else that was doing this who was far older than me that probably looked at other players, then they have a better assessment of who they saw when they were younger and who they've seen since and how they can compare them. I decided to set myself up the criteria of they have to have been playing from when I started being a fan because sure, you have players like Glenn Hoddle. Spoiler, Glenn Hoddle is not my midfielder. But I can't, everybody knows he was a top player, but I can't discuss that because I didn't see him play for Spurs. You only have the second-hand testimonies from people. You know, my testimony would be second-hand, rather, based on what I've read from what other people have said, or I've spoken to other fans who have seen him at that time. So I decided to stick mainly to players that I have seen play, and that were key and star players from when I was a fan. Well, during my time as a fan, I say when I was a fan, you don't give that kind of thing up, you know, during my time as a Tottenham fan. And then you kind of had, I kind of had the other criteria of they had to have had some form of impact whilst they were there, and not just what, like, on the pitch, but in terms of, in a weird way, what happened when they departed the club or when they are not playing, what impact that has. Because I feel, as we'll discuss later on with one of the picks, the departure of a player can change a club in any way. And I think knock-on effect of one player leaving, that can determine how important they were then when they were there. And it's almost kind of like a, you know, as the saying goes, you don't know what you've got until it's gone. You know, I'm definitely in the camp of, and it's not just for this particular thing, but for a lot of other cases. And when you're talking about legacy and everything along those lines, you throw that keyword out there. You know, it all depends on what happens post the actual incident. So, for example, Liverpool. Oh, you just use Liverpool, the current Liverpool side, as an example. When they won the Champions League last year, which I said to myself I wouldn't mention, but you know, I had to bring it up on this occasion. But when they beat a team from London in last season's Champions League final, it was kind of like, okay, they've done very well, but what do they do next? That will really cement their legacy. And then they've just gone and completely walked the league. So it's like, oh, okay, that cements that legacy for that team. And then you look at other, just throw a team out there, where Chelsea's team under Antonio Conte, another team that beat us to a trophy. I'm not good at this. I'm actually picking the worst teams to use as examples. But you look at that team, and that isn't remembered as fondly as other teams, despite the fact it had a lot of points. It beat off, not arguably, the best Tottenham team of my lifetime. It beat off that team, but it's not remembered. So the legacy valuation is a bit different because of what followed it. And I think that applies to some of these players here, and that's the criteria I set for some of them. Not for all of them, for reasons that I'll go into later on, but for some of them, it was a case of, okay, they obviously were very, very good when they were there, but what happened when they left? What was the impact caused from when they left? So that's the two pieces of criteria I set myself when picking this, which, in a way, it kind of made the picks a little bit more straightforward. But if I was to go a bit deeper and go into the historic side of the club, then it would have been a difficult pick, because we have had some, even though we haven't been blessed with too much success, we have had some excellent players over the course of time.
It's interesting, actually. We chat about, well, this is the fourth one, and we've had people come on with so many different criteria for picking the sort of four players, and certainly the one that's been the most, not contentious, but the one that's made a smile is the centre half position. So I suppose this time, Gary, we can expect a slightly different type of centre half in this one.
I think we can, yeah. It's interesting, you know, and I think the rationale for this series, and why, if it works, I think it work. If it does work, the reason I think it works is because we're talking about not necessarily the greatest players who have played for these clubs, but the fans, the individual fan we're talking to, their favourite for their own reasons. And Tom's just explained his reasons perfectly well. Not that you need to, you know, your choice is your choice. But Tom's got a rationale for the reason he's selected his players, as have the other guys we spoke to about Newcastle and Celtic and
Everton.
Sorry, Everton. they've all got reasons why they picked those players, and I think that's the beauty of this. You know, it's because it's very personal to the people we're talking to.
It's I think, Stephen, it's like we say, it's going to be interesting that it's going to be obviously clearly condensed into a relatively sort of short period of time, as Tom's justified there, and yet there are still probably within, well, apart from maybe one of them, there are still within quite distinctive eras, even despite the relatively close age range.
Yes, you know, some cross paths and others don't, but they're all from a defined certain era. You know, there's only two that played together there. Yeah, there's only two that played together. Actually two separate twos there, two separate sets of two. So yeah, they come from two, you know, defined Tottenham eras. But yeah, you know, Tom's, you know, criteria for this is certainly not wrong. You know, I don't think there is a wrong way of doing this. you know, and I can fully understand people picking players from only from eras that they remember. You know, but Paul went off a different direction. You know, when he picked Everton, you know, he felt that he was compelled to pick Dixie Dean. You know, a man that, you know, not even Gary's old enough to.
You're right.
Well, yeah, you know, I think that they're all, you know, fantastic players, and the thing is that, you know, this will come across as Tom puts his explanations behind each one.
I've got to ask Tom, just really quick, I'm really sorry, just as you moved your head there, I'm a little bit distracted. That shirt behind you, that red number 14, or looks red, I'm assuming that's not Thierry Henry's shirt you've got up there.
No, it's a shade of red. It's an orange number 14.
Okay, fair enough.
In this household, I only recognise one player as a true number 14, and it isn't the one that you said. Especially right now, that is, I could probably consider that a little bit of blasphemy.
Well, that's what I must admit. It was as you moved your head, and I was like, "Is revealed a Thierry Henry shirt in the background?" I wasn't expecting it.
Twist.
Good. So that's cleared that up. Right then, your first choice. Then we start at the back. We start with the goalkeeper. Was it close?
No, I'm going to be honest.
Excellent.
Because I looked back at it and I kind of applied that criteria to it. I looked at it and just went, okay, well, my first goalkeeper that I remember was Paul Robinson, who was excellent. I think he's one of these keepers. He was England's the golden generation as a goalkeeper, which is terrible to say out loud, but that's what he was and that's what he should be remembered as. He was a top goalkeeper, both for Leeds and for Spurs. But he wasn't. I don't know whether it was because he was just about so far back into the past, whether it was my mind has just forgotten what it was, or I don't necessarily remember much of him as a goalkeeper from when I was younger. But then he sold him on for Aurelio Gomez, and you know I've met Aurelio Gomez. I've done work with Watford. He's a gentleman. He's a lovely, lovely person. But as a goalkeeper for Tottenham, in the nicest way possible, he wasn't getting anywhere near this team. And I think he'd probably admit that, to be fair to him. And then I think we had Brad Friedel, who, again, another excellent goalkeeper. Very, very solid, but he was only there for a short period of time. So it left me with our current goalkeeper, Hugo Lloris, who I think is a little bit underrated by the fans at the moment, a little bit underrated by most people. And I don't like, you know, it cringes me when people say this a little bit, but the mainstream media don't view him as in the light that I feel he should do, because this is a guy that joins us pretty much, I think it was the AVB era, the André Villas-Boas era, which is an era that most people only really remember for one person, and it wasn't AVB himself. And it was like, he joined the club at a strange time where we kind of had a bit of ambition to sign a player as good as Hugo Lloris, but then they didn't really match up with it across the rest of the pitch. Which seems to be a common theme with this club, actually. But he stuck through AVB. He survived Tim Sherwood, because I think that's probably the best way to say that in that time period. And then he goes through the era of Pochettino. And then he's a goalkeeper that I think has excelled in a modern era where being good with your feet is so important. And it's almost like, you know, the rule of being a goalkeeper is that you save shots. And that's what he's excellent at. And he's a leader. He was obviously the captaincy was taken off him, after he had a bit of an incident involving one or too many liquids he shouldn't have been drinking whilst driving, which was, yeah, any normal thinking football fan or Tottenham fan would be just like, yep, fair enough. No one's got any complaints with anything like that. But he's kind of taken that. And if you hear what the players say about him, if you hear what the coaches say about him, in the very rare pieces where they do actually speak, there's a kind of a leadership quality about him that he exudes respect. What am I on about? You know, he's very quiet in the dressing room. He's very calm in the dressing room. And I think a lot of people look up to him, and a lot of people kind of take that and they can't help but feel respect towards him. And I think that says a lot about him as a person, but as a player as well. There's no coincidence that our best ever defence, a lot of people talk about the back line of Kyle Walker, Toby Alderweireld, Jan Vertonghen, Danny Rose, but they never ever mentioned the fellow behind them, Hugo Lloris. And to make a back line work, you need to have a top goalkeeper. And that back line wouldn't have worked with a different, well, it may have worked with a different goalkeeper, but for that particular team, Hugo Lloris was the perfect player for that team because of those exact reasons, because the defenders trusted him, because they looked up to him. He was a calm president. calm presence. And because he just commanded respect from those around him, especially those in the Tottenham dressing room, whether it be the younger players or the players like Toby Adebayo, who has played with top players at clubs like Ajax and Atletico Madrid. They looked at Hugo Lloris and they recognised he was a mighty fine goalkeeper. And I think it would have been unfair for him to not have selected him as my goalkeeper for this team.
That's fair. Gary, happy with... I mean, obviously, like you say, Tom's set his stall out early for his criteria. Like, you know, as you and Stephen have both said, which is great. It's, you know, it is what it is. It's there to be chosen. It's the guest prerogative. And, you know, based on what he's said, the only real choice?
Yeah, I guess so. I remember before Tottenham bought Lloris, there's one of these goalkeepers or of these players who were sort of rumoured to be moving to England for 12 months, 18 months before it actually happened. And, you sort of question reputations built in Ligue 1 as opposed to players in Spain or Germany or even in the Premier League. So, you know, you were sort of, there was a doubt about him, would he be able to hack it in the big league? As I say, you know, with the physical presence and such like. But, you know, yes, he did. And, he's a far more than merely decent goalkeeper. And he's done certainly well for Tottenham. Obviously, just looking back at other possibilities that sort of before Tom's time, not quite going back as far as Dixie Dean, Stevie, but, you know. the other guy, obviously, flag up, and I'm sure, you know, Tom will have heard talk of the great Pat Jennings. Probably the best Tottenham goalkeeper I ever saw. Amazing. An entirely different type of goalkeeper to Lloris as well. Lloris has got that live, acrobatic, agile ability about him where Jennings was more the dominant goalkeeper. He'd be sort of commanded by his presence rather than his sheer shot-stopping ability. Not that he was all down that. But yeah, I can't get across Tom's criteria. Can't argue with Lloris.
It's funny, Steve, you know, the last one we did was Celtic and we talked about sometimes, and this is no disrespect to Tom, his team and all the Tottenham fans that are listening, but, you know, we talked about the Celtic choice and how, you know, is it difficult? Do keepers often get missed out in, you know, in great teams, in great eras? But yet when you, and we had Aidan example, for example, for Newcastle, and, you know, the goalkeeper was very clear, very obvious, sort of picked itself based on Newcastle's defensive woes, shall we say. Do we think Lloris maybe fits into this particular category where he had the chance to excel as a goalkeeper?
He's somewhere in the middle in that respect. You know, Tottenham are so close to being, and have been so close to being, you know, a team of trophy winning substance, you know, for some time. The roughly where Liverpool were 5 years ago. Four years ago, you know, they're on the brink of it, so close to, you know, they could almost touch it, and they could, you know, in Madrid, it was there, and it was so close, and you know, it will come again. You know, they are, I'm convinced about that. They're in that position where it comes in cycles. You know, they have that disappointment. Liverpool did it. That disappointment of coming so close, and then it almost breaks the heart of a club. And it takes about 3 or 4 years to get over, you know, and a club will regenerate and have another go. And Tottenham are in that position at the minute where they're going for that period of regeneration, they'll come again. So for me, Lloris is within that category. This is nothing like Edwin van der Sar signing for Fulham, for instance. You know, this is nothing like that. You know, van der Sar, another world-class goalkeeper that was, you know, expected or thought to be the first of a run of star names to be signed, and it never quite worked out that way. But, you know, Lloris was kind of like the bedrock of which this team could be built upon. And, you know, yeah, there might have been other career moves he could have made. But, you know, when push comes to shove, you know, he made his move to Tottenham. And I think, you know, for me, he'll walk away from White Hart Lane with something tangible that made it so worth it. You know, it'll be a mutual beneficial thing eventually. And for the era and the criteria that Tom has put on this, you know, there is no contest. You know, he is definitely the best goalkeeper that Tottenham have had in the Premier League era. And that's not to say that it's anything like Newcastle was, where, you know, the pickings were slim. You know, Brad Friedel did very, very well in a Tottenham shirt. You know, there were other exceptions that could have... I think might have done well, but didn't quite do well. You know, Carlo Cudicini should have done so well in a Tottenham shirt. He was such a missed opportunity, you know, for Tottenham. I thought he was a wonderful goalkeeper for Chelsea. Got usurped by Petr Cech, and when moving on to Tottenham, I thought he'd do great things, and you know, it wasn't to be. But you know, for games played, saves made, you know, an impression made, and you know, a huge success that came so close. You know, yeah, Lloris is the only way to go in this respect. But yeah, you know, but historically, Tottenham have had some wonderful goalkeepers. You know, Pat Jennings, you know, the best. You know, for me, my age, I remember Pat Jennings as an Arsenal goalkeeper. I don't remember his Tottenham playing days. You know, it always jarred in that respect. You know, it's only as I've got older that it, you know, it jars the opposite way now. That, you know, he is Tottenham. You know, he's not Arsenal. You know, when I was a kid, he was Arsenal. How could he possibly be Tottenham? The opposite way around, you know, and I'd throw Ray Clements into that as well. You know, Ray Clements as Tottenham goalkeeper was wonderful. You know, I think he struggled. I think we mentioned on a recent podcast.
Yeah.
He struggles as a Tottenham player, but then came good. You know, he matured again with age, and, you know, his best football in a Tottenham shirt came towards the end of his career, you know. But moving away to Tom's criteria, then there's no one other than Hugo Lloris for this.
I like the way you've turned it into a games played, saves made type sort of rap that you've got going there that we need to embed each time. Okay, so Tom, excellent. A quite positive start by the guys, no problems there. Not that it would matter if they disagreed anyway, because these are your choices, so it doesn't matter. We move on to the back four then. Again, was it difficult? Was it easy? I mean, to be fair, the choice you've made, I think, is a brilliant choice for what it's worth. I think it's a great, great choice that you've made. But again, it doesn't matter what I think either. So how difficult was it to pick your defender?
Again, not very easy, because this man was my favourite player growing up. He was my favourite player growing up. And if you said, who's your favourite Tottenham player of all time, it's this man. There is no way that you can pick an all-time Tottenham team without picking Deadly, Deadly King, because that man is the fact that he's come back into the fold as we're recording. He's set to come join Jose Mourinho's coaching staff, and that, for me, when I heard that news, I almost celebrated it like it was a goal, because even though he's not going to do that much, just the mere sight of the king of himself is enough to send me into places where no other fans should go. He was, apart from the fact that he's a one club man, he was exceptional. He was I'll try to express how I feel about it, and I think I've probably made that point already, but that man was unbelievable when you consider everything around him. And this is what I was saying earlier about when it comes to the legacy of a player, where everybody knows the stories about he, you know, he's only got one, what is it, Deadly, Deadly, he's only got one knee. That's how the song used to go, and he would train in Daniel Levy's pool during the week and still be picked by Harry Redknapp on the weekend and still be man of the match. And it's like, I know Mr. Redknapp has a tendency to be a bit loose with his stories, but I think that's one where I can attest and hold my hands up and go, no, he's spot on there. Because no matter who you put him alongside, he was the best player on the pitch. Even if Tottenham had lost, Deadly King had had a good game. And I think, again, it boils down to, I always kind of judge a player based on what, and I probably shouldn't do this, but you can always tell the greatness of a player from what other people have said. And not just, you know, other people in general, but when you hear people like Thierry Henry kind of saying the one player, every player tried to drag his shirt or pull his shirt, but the only one that didn't drag his shirt and could still catch up to him was Deadly King. And I think that kind of sums it up. He was everything you would want in a defender. In a way, he was probably 10 years too early with his career, or even the prime of his career, because everybody kind of, they look at that era of English football and go, John Terry, Rio Ferdinand, two, in their own right, brilliant defenders. And then you move past them too, and then you get the one that moved from Tottenham to Arsenal, whose name begins with an S, and his last name is Campbell. And yes, I still haven't got around to fully saying his name just yet. But they were the three centre-backs that you look at, and then you kind of had the fourth, and it was it's a no-brainer that Deadly King should be a part of that conversation with them four. And the stories about him being unfit, well, not necessarily unfit, but constantly injured, always having to train on his own to get his fitness back, and then being able to play and being superb, alongside the fact that when the said Arsenal defender left Tottenham on a free transfer, it was kind of left to Ledley King to be the man of that defence, where, you know, anybody that supports a club will know the importance of a so-called one-club man. And I think Ledley King is the perfect choice. Well, I say choice, but he's a perfect player to kind of emphasise that with Spurs, because you see what he's done since he's retired, and he's still around the club, was around the club in an ambassadorial role. And now he's coming back as a coach, which is just fantastic. And then the one memory that always sticks out in my mind, and I think is the one memory that always sticks out in everybody's mind when they talk about how good Ledley King was in 2007 when we played Chelsea at home. We ended up winning the game 2-1. But Iron Robin was played through, and no one catches up to Iron Robin. The man, even when he was at Chelsea, was like a bullet train. He was unbelievably quick. But Ledley King still had the pace to catch up to him. He still had the pace to tackle him. He still had the pace to win the ball. And he still had the ability to knock it out for a corner and then just get up like nothing's happened. And I think that, for me, is the one memory that when people say, how good was he? In 10, 15 years' time, when people go, yeah, but how good was it? Just show them that clip. Just show them that clip, and that'll tell you everything you need to know about how intelligent he was, how quick he was, how deceivingly quick he was, and how well he timed everything he did. It's epitomised everything in that clip.
It's a great eulogy from Tom about Ledley King. And like I say, for me, I thought it was a wonderful, wonderful defender. And I think it's interesting what Tom mentioned there about the year with John Terry, Rio Ferdinand. But to me, he was far, far better than both those two players. As a footballer, as a footballing centre-half, I thought he was wonderful, wonderful player.
There's this sort of sad lament about Ledley King. As good as he was, as exceptionally talented footballer as he was, you almost think what he could have been if he didn't have that dodgy knee. There was potential there that, fully warranted being talked about, in the same discussion as Ferdinand and Terry and Saul Campbell. But, those three didn't have dodgy knees. If he hadn't had that problem, this guy could have been, we could have been talking about, the class of Baresi. We could have been talking about the class of Maldini. We could have been talking about the class of Sergio Ramos, Carlos Puyol. The potential was there for him to be exceptional. I mean, continuing playing on one perishing leg, he was a pretty decent defender. And as Tom said, to have the pace to catch up, close a gap on Arjen Robben on one knee, by God, that knee must have been pretty damn good.
Stephen, two things, like I said before. The sort of centre-halves that we've been used to discussing have been picked, have all sort of harked back to the days when defenders defended, and that was it. And I suppose this is the first real example of the ball playing centre half, if you like, or the intelligent centre half. But and also, you must have seen him at Anfield, a number of times, and your sort of perspective of him as an away fan of Ledley King.
Oh, just so cool on the ball. I think you get these central defenders that they ooze a certain presence. That's the only way I can describe it, is that, just the way that they walk, just the way that they compose themselves, just the way that they will move before receiving the ball. It's that whole presence of mind, and, it's the whole, they just see the game unfolding before they get the ball. You get these central defenders sometimes where they're just designed to stop. They're just designed to halt attackers, but then you get others who are, they could translate to so many other positions if they had the physique or the speed for it. You get some that could absolutely adapt to any position. Ledley King had one of those footballing brains that just read the game beautifully. And I think, as much as Tom doesn't want to kind of like give him airtime, the fact that Tottenham didn't miss Saul Campbell was down to Ledley King. You can throw another player into the hat there, is that he overshadowed, and it was another central defender that Tottenham had during that era, and another wonderful thinking central defender in Jonathan Woodgate. And that it's so easy to forget that he played for Tottenham, in some respects. But again, you know, his own injury problems, but the fact that, you know, King was still so dominant despite Woodgate being there. You know, this was a player that Real Madrid thought well enough to spend a huge amount of money on and nurse through various injuries, you know, to try and coax, you know, the talent from him. You know, and Spurs, you know, they didn't suffer from Woodgate's, you know, lack of games. You know, they always suffered through King's lack of games. When he was missing, you know, they missed him. You know, and I think that's one of the biggest tells of the quality of a central defender.
It's, I mean, before we, you know, again, I know, you know, Tom said he's crouching choice, but I suppose, Gary, there needs to be a nod perhaps to Gary Mabber and Steve Perryman, maybe.
Yeah. I mean, going even farther back, talking about Mike England, I mean, you know, he was a dominant centre-half for the Spurs. I mean, you know, I can't go back 60 years, isn't it? But, you know, legendary players, Dave McKay, Tottenham had some great defenders over the years, you know, Cyril Knowles even. But you know, I think you could stack Mike England and Dan McCoy with different sort of players, I guess. But you could stack any of those defenders up in the past against Ledley King, and he wouldn't be embarrassed by them. Exception, you know, one of these players who you can say, you know, a great defender, but he's probably a better footballer than he was as a defender. And you know, as I say, you just lament about what he could have been, if injuries that knee hadn't wrecked his career, you know, to reach the heights he did carrying that knee. I mean, he could have been, you know, literally one of the best defenders on the planet, literally.
But before we move, just one question, Tom, about Ledley King. Before we move on, how do you think he would have played abroad in the Italian game?
He would have been perfectly fine.
Yeah, I agree. I was just interested, but I agree.
I think with Ledley King, and we've spoken about it a little bit here, with his knee injury, if he doesn't have that knee, I remember when I was younger and he was playing for us and he was, you know, hobbling about on one knee but still being the best player on the pitch. I remember just saying and being the only one that would recognise it and kind of go, if this guy didn't have his knee injury, he'd be at Real Madrid, he'd be at Barcelona, he would be whatever the top team was at that time, he'd be their centre-half. He could have gone to Italy and fitted into any team and he wouldn't have looked out of place. He was so good at it, whatever he did, and, you know, there were other options to pick from this. We look at more recently players like Toby Alderweireld and Yann Bertong, who are excellent defenders in their own right, but none of them come close to Ledley King, because I think even though he didn't play abroad, you could recognise that he had all the skill and all the quality to be able to pull it off in Spain, in Germany, in Italy, wherever he went, he could have done it. And I think if he doesn't have that knee injury, he's not at Spurs for as long as he was, because somebody else comes in. And maybe Man United look at him and buy him instead of whoever they bought. Like maybe instead of Nemanja Vidic, they decide to pair up Rio Ferdinand and then Ledley King. Maybe that's how they go down it. And I think he was just so good. He was just so good that he could play for Spurs. And I'm forever grateful that he did play for us. But you know, when you look at a player and kind of go, you could have played wherever you wanted. You could have had your choice of clubs if you wanted to.
Like I say, wonderful, wonderful footballer. Okay, so midfield then, we start to move up the pitch. I want to say to the more creative players, but like I say, Ledley King, as Gary mentioned, better footballer perhaps than a defender. So how did you decide on your midfielder?
Now, I'm not the biggest fan of this midfielder. I'm not as high on him as a lot of other people are, but there's no denying that he was unbelievable for us. In a couple of years spell, he was superb. And he was the only, well, not the only guy in mind, but he might be the only player before this current crop of players that you could put into the category of superstar. And Gareth Bale was Tottenham for about 2 to 3 years. And there has not been many players outside of Messi and Ronaldo where you can tune in to watch them. And you know that if they get the ball for about 20 yards from goal, you see that left foot going back. And you know he's going to shoot. And you can't help but think, this is a goal. Like, this is going in. He was one of those players. I think he is another player that kind of... He is probably the reason why I had to put in that second criteria of what happens after you leave. Because we cashed in on him. And we got £85 million for him, which was great. And then we spent it on nothing. And it was it was so Tottenham to do it that way. But I think that kind of epitomises his influence on the team, where we sold, the famous quote on this one, the famous Garth Crooks quote, Tottenham have sold the Beatles, sold Elvis and bought the Beatles. And it's like, at the time, I remember being so kind of like, yeah, we have. He's right. We have done well with this money. But then he leaves, he goes to Real Madrid, he achieves what he achieved with them. What happens with us happens. Nasir Chadli is a thing, Roberto Soldado is a thing. And then in hindsight, you do look back and go, now he was unbelievable. He was a pure match winner. And I remember the goal he scored against West Ham, which is, I will remember it as Tom Carroll's greatest 2-yard pass, because he passes the ball to Bale, and Bale turns, he swings it left foot back, and it going into the top corner as soon as it leaves his boot. But I also think his rise to Spurs from his early days, where he was known for being, he's playing, we're not going to win. I think it might have been Birmingham or Nottingham Forest we were going to get rid of him to. And then Assi Ocasio gets injured, so we kind of have to play a left back, and he was the only one they had in there, and he just took off. From that point on, there was no stopping. So the perfect football story of how things can change like that. In an instant, your career can be changed. But also, he was crucial to our success in the box. Well, say success, but our good run in the Champions League that season. Because everybody says that hat-trick he scored in the San Siro was when he announced himself. It may have been when he announced himself to the rest of Europe, but that 6 months from December to the end of the 2009-2010 season, he was unbelievable. He was so, so good. He scored against Chelsea when we needed him to at White Hart Lane. He scored in the North London Derby when we needed to, on that Danny Rose, that famous Danny Rose goal. And it was like, he would pop up at any moment and he would win a match on his own. And I think he had a quality that you can't buy. And that's what Tottenham tried to do. He had a match-winning quality, which he then goes to show on for Real Madrid. But my first choice for this, when I first got this, was Rafa van der Vaart, because I preferred him as a player. But you can't talk about Tottenham in my lifetime without talking about Gareth Bale.
It's a great, I mean, Gary, you know, again, you know, this is something not relatively new, but in terms of, you know, as Tom's mentioned there, the, you know, longevity has sometimes come into this. But, you know, and Tom's right, you know, you look at Gareth Bale's impact, and probably had more impact than some players would have had 10 years at Tottenham. You know, and that's something that can't be ignored. And that quality, or that title of match winner, you know, is applied quite rarely. You know, it's a very rare application to a player now. You know, there is Lionel Messi, Cristiano Ronaldo, you know, they do exist, but genuine match winners are incredibly few and far between.
Yeah, it's one of those things where he didn't shine for very long, but by God, he shone brightly when he was at Tottenham. It's interesting when we're sort of looking at Tom's choices of this, there's, you know, this is a category where, you know, we could pick 7 or 8 players each. Tom mentioned Hoddle earlier, you know, one of the reasons he didn't choose Hoddle, and, you know, Van der Vaart, Chrissy Waddle, Ginola, Gazza as well, or Digles. But perhaps the other one where I might have sort of leaned towards was Luka Modric, because obviously Bale and Modric both came out here to Spain, and when Bale came out, obviously Ronaldo was the number one guy at Real Madrid, and if anybody's sort of close to taking off, he's, you know, he sat down and spit his dummy out, and he used to decide that Ronaldo's free kicks were like an exocet, and when Bale came, you know, suddenly it became Bale's free kicks were called the tomahawk, and you can almost understand that. Because it was that sort of blistering power of it that would, you know, it could goalkeeper off almost the power he could strike a ball with. And for a short time over here, he was a revelation. And it all went wrong, and I don't know why. It's interesting, you know, Tom said there that when he took off the Spurs, it was like flicking a light switch. And it's almost like the light switch was turned off after a while when he came over here. You know, and Bale's one of these players when, you know, as Tom mentioned, he's an edge-of-the-seat player. You know, he gets the ball, you think, hello, something's going to happen here. He's got that sort of that quality about him. So I can understand why Tom would go with that, with Bale as his choice. But, you know, Van der Vaart, honourable mention, totally understandable, Tom. I might lean towards Modric. first slightly, what did this slightly disagreement, but you know, Tom's choice, and you know, Bale, it's a perfectly reasonable case, and Tom makes it very well for him.
Stephen, for you, you know, I mean, like we say, for a, you know, for two or three seasons, you know, Gareth Bale, I suppose, probably was the dominant figure in the Premier League in terms of excitement, the match winner, the go-to, you know, a team's go-to player for a result. Obviously, there's not the difficulty with this. I'm not a Tottenham fan, so I have no difficulty whatsoever. But I suppose there is this legacy that Gareth Bale will carry of being a multiple Champions League winner. And it's differentiating the Gareth Bale, and like Gary's mentioned, the Gareth Bale of Real Madrid and the success, as opposed to just purely the player that Gareth Bale was at Tottenham.
Yeah, but within that, I think the importance of Bale at Tottenham was just so huge. It was, you know, we talked about Ledley King before, but, you know, Bale was Tottenham in an attacking sense, you know, and it was the way he came from left field, literally from left field, you know, as this misfit of a left back to suddenly this most potent left-sided attacking threat in world football, because he went from nowhere to everywhere, and he was just so dangerous with the ball at his feet. He could carry the ball, he could hit it from dead balls. The technique was just incredible, you know, and it was just the shock and awe of it all, because he really did come from nowhere. You know, as Tom says, you know, there was talk of Nottingham Forest taking them off their hands, and, you know, he'd been part of this thread of players that had come through with a huge reputation and broke through very, very young and was plucked from elsewhere. And it looked like he wasn't going to fulfil this prophecy, you know, like several others had fallen down that route as well. But suddenly he just clicked at a time when Tottenham clicked as well. So, you know, I think one of the biggest things for me is that when it did come to him leaving Tottenham, there was a sense of relief that he didn't fall into the hands of Manchester United, for instance. You know, they were good enough as it was without adding him to their armoury at that time. But Bale was, you know, he propelled that Tottenham side into the Champions League. You know, it was him that gave them that edge once they got there and made them competitive. You know, we'd had teams from England, from the Premier League, going into the Champions League from a standing start and you know, struggled with it. But Tottenham took to it like a duck to water. And it was, you know, Gareth Bale, I can't say it was down to him completely, but he made the difference between Tottenham being a side that was going to struggle at the group stages to knocking on the door of the semi-finals.
I suppose quickly, Tom, just before we come to your last position, you know, and obviously Gareth Bale's predicament in Madrid, would Tottenham take him back? Would you take him back if the chance came?
If Tottenham would take him back and if I would take him back, I think are questions that would have two completely different answers. I don't think Spurs would.
Okay.
Just because of the financial aspect of it, because he's on quite a lot of money. He's not the player he was. Obviously, time changes people and everything like that. But because of his sudden kind of bursts of pace and because of how his body grew, he kind of changed bodies within two seasons. And I think that has ultimately cost him caused him muscle problems heading down the line. Because when you were his size and when you were someone with his pace, you either have to be made of steel or incredibly lucky to not have persistent muscle problems. And I think that's what's happened with him in Madrid. But I also think his head isn't in football anymore, which is, you know, he's a short career. I don't really care that much about him anymore. He's not our player anymore. To be honest, I stopped caring about him when he refused to train and went on a day strike to get his move to Real Madrid, which was going to happen anyway. And it's like, okay, it's like, I wouldn't go on strike if the sun doesn't come up in the morning. It's going to happen. I just need to be patient. It was the same with him. And ever since then, I've kind of been a bit sour towards him. I wouldn't take him back for that reason, because I think, you know, I can sound as sensible and sound as whatever, as mature as I like. But deep down, I'm still a football fan who, if you say anything bad about my club, I will find something about it. I will find the littlest thing and kind of go, well, no, that's it. That's done. But I just think, yeah, we could spend money better on a person whose personal motto is Wales, golf, Madrid in that order. Despite how I feel about him now, he was still a wonderful player that still had excitement added to him, and he was still a really, really good player for us. Even if, you know, we mentioned players like Rafa van der Vaart, Luka Modric, who was my fourth choice. My third was Moussa Dembélé, because that man was a Rolls-Royce of a midfielder. But I just felt you can't not mention, like I said before, you can't not mention Bale. But no, I wouldn't take him back. I think he's had his time at Spurs. Very, very rarely does a player go back to a club and it work out well. And even when we took Robbie Keane back from his six-month holiday in Merseyside all them years ago, he didn't come back the same player. And I think it did tarnish his, again, it tarnished his legacy a little bit. And I think if Bale did come back, which, yeah, wonderful player as he is, I hope he doesn't. I hope he enjoys his life in Spain. I think it would tarnish his first stint at Spurs, because people have recency bias, and that wouldn't be exempt from him. You know, people remember the latest thing they've seen, and if the latest thing of Gareth Bale they see is a top-knotted footballer with dodgy hamstrings who enjoys playing in Hertfordshire golf clubs more than he goes to training, and I think what he did in his first spell is kind of overshadowed in a way.
It's a great argument, and it's a great point. I suppose then we come to the striker, and again, you know, going back through history, there's been some, you know, some wonderful strikers, but based on the criteria that you chose, was this one difficult?
Yes and no, because even though this fella, he was always going to be number one, but players like Robbie Keane, Jermaine Defoe, Dimitar Berbatov, they were always players that have to be mentioned when you're talking about Tottenham strikers, mainly because they were the players that I grew up with, and you always remember the players that you grew up with more fondly than you do anybody else. But it's not going to take a genius to figure out that Harry Kane's a striker, because the man is a goal machine, and he's just so good. And his, I think what helps as well, that very rarely are you able to see the development of a player from a young raw, stick him up front, he might grab a goal, developing throughout his time at Tottenham to becoming arguably the best striker on the planet. That never happens at any club. That certainly never happens at a club like Spurs. Because if we ever get a good player, you know, like Gareth Bale, like Luka Modric, like the fella that went to Arsenal them years ago, they develop with Spurs and then leave to go to a bigger club. Harry Kane, at the time of recording, hasn't left. And there's always a distinct possibility of it. But the fella is a goal machine. There's no other way of putting it. He's developed. I remember I went to a North London derby many, many years ago at the old White Hart Lane, the better White Hart Lane. And he scored two goals. I think it was Pochettino's second North London derby, and we won 2-1. And he scored, the first goal was a really good poacher's goal at the back post. Someone, I think it might have been Eric Dyer, flicked the ball on the front post. Goalkeeper parried it straight into the path. It may have looked like a tap-in, but it was very, you watch the replay, he got off his man, he got into the right position, and he kind of knew where that ball was going. The second one, Nabil Bentaleb puts in a wonderful cross. That's a blast from the past. Nabil Bentaleb puts in a cross, Harry Kane, back post, like a salmon, bosh. 2-1, we win the game, he's a sudden hero. He just keeps going, and his goals get better. The goal he's scored against Arsenal the following season, when he's at the edge of the box and curls it into the far side. The fact that he's got multiple golden boots, the fact that this is going to sound so cliche, and this is going to sound so proper football, but he is Tottenham. And I think that's what fans love about him, is that Robbie Keane ran around and he played for the shirt, because he probably supported us when he was a child, along with 12 other clubs. But he ran around, and the fans loved him. But he wasn't Tottenham. Dimitar Berbatov might be the most skillful player we've ever seen at the club, but he left for Man United, and he wasn't Tottenham. Jermaine Defoe was about as close as you were going to get to Tottenham without being Tottenham. And then Harry Kane comes along. And again, I think it does help his case. And I feel sorry for this fella, because he gets lumbered around, and he's a bit of a joke. But he followed Roberto Soldado, and it was like, all right, fair enough. You scored a couple of goals, you're immediately better than him. But, you know, Soldado was a good penalty taker. And Harry Kane comes in, and he was just perfect. He was the perfect striker at the perfect time for the perfect club. And I think that's still the case now.
I mean, Gary, obviously, you know, when you think of Tottenham, we would, you know, you go straight to Jimmy Greaves, but you can only play in your era. You can only, you know, Harry Kane's career isn't finished yet. You know, he's literally, if not in his prime, he's approaching what are going to be his prime seasons. And as Tom's, you know, again, as Tom's put there, you know, he is Tottenham. This, you know, this is almost, based on Tom's criteria, this is probably one of the easiest decisions to make.
Yeah, I mean, you couldn't, given Tom's criteria, you couldn't think of another one. It's absolutely struggle. And if the second one you're thinking about is Soldado, well, that's fresh air second. In fact, fresh air is third and fourth as well. I mean, obviously, Tottenham in the past have had some great strikers. We mentioned Jimmy Greaves. Lineker, Tom mentioned Robbie Keane, but you know, Klinsmann, even going back a little farther, you know, Martin Chivers, outstanding striker for the Spurs. Harry Kane is one of these sort of, we spoke with Paul about Celtic and Henrik Larsson, and Harry Kane's a bit like that. And you know, he's, you know, as Tom says, he's like a goal machine. You know, he just, you know, you put your money in the top and the chocolate bar comes out the other end with a goal wrapped around it. but I don't know how he does it, because he's not particularly fast. He's quick enough. He's not particularly, he's not, you know, he's no sprinter. He's no Adama Traoré. Right? He's big, but he's not, you know, he's not massive. He's strong, but he's not, you know, he's not that. That's his biggest strength, I'm not sure. He just knows how to put the ball in the onion bag. And he scores so many different types of goals. You know, he scores free kicks, he scores headers, he scores tap-ins. He'll score from distance, he'll score from short range, he'll score volleys. They'll control and turn a man and score. It's one of these things where, as I say, I don't know what he does, but what's even more to sort of calculate is what he doesn't do, because he scores so many different types of goals. And, you know, it's interesting that Tom says, you know, at the time of recording, and it's you know, if this guy is one of the premier strikers in Europe, and he probably is, you wonder if he wants to finish his career potentially winning an odd cup here or there and struggling to win a league. Is he that much of Tottenham? Yeah, I don't know. I really don't know. If he was playing for us, by God, I'd bloody love him.
I mean, it's funny, you know, Tom's mentioned there, you know, he's won multiple Golden Boots. I mean, there's been 21 World Cups, 21 Golden Boot winners in the entire history of the game. Harry Kane is one of them. That, you know, that's got to, on somebody's CV, that's not too, when you're one of 21 that has ever played the game, it says something about him. Regardless of who you scored against, who the goals came up against, there's still only 21.
It's amazing. As you say, you know, when you test yourself against the best, you know, the best rise to the top, and in the World Cup, the competition doesn't get any more fierce than that. And to be ranked amongst the, you know, some of the players we'll look back in history, you know, I suppose you're talking, you know, Pelé, Ronaldo, the first Ronaldo, the proper Ronaldo. You know, and there he is. And the reason he's there ranked amongst them is because he deserved to be. You know, he scored the goals, and that's the criteria upon which that Golden Boot is measured.
I mean, Stephen, this is always a difficult question, and it's not something that I'm loath to ask, but, you know, I mean, I suppose the question with Harry Kane is, you know, compared to sort of the, you know, the other players that we've talked about, is this is, you know, the one so far that we've mentioned of all, not saying of, yeah, they've probably played at their peak and are now maybe on the way down. Certainly, obviously, Ledley King, you know, who doesn't play anymore. And Bale, obviously, you know, has achieved wonderful things at Real Madrid. But in terms of Harry Kane, I mean, you know, potentially how good can he be?
He can be whatever he wants to be. Push comes to shove, he's just that type of player. You know, it's all down to how motivated he stays, what his ambition is, whether Tottenham can match his ambition, you know, or whether he seeks pastures new. So it depends what's the most important thing to Harry Kane. You know, he could end up being, you know, another, you know, at a higher level. But you look at a player like Steve Ball, who remained, you know, predominantly loyal to Wolves. You look at a Matt Le Tissier, who remained loyal to Southampton. Is that, you know, they were compelled to stay with those teams, and Harry Kane might well do the same thing. You know, same thing with Steven Gerrard. Steven Gerrard, you know, flirted with the idea of going you know, stayed at Liverpool. Harry Kane is actually the same type of thing. You know, he gives something to Tottenham that they've not had for, you know, 30 years, 34, maybe 40 years now, almost, for 35 years. I don't think there's been a Tottenham player since Steve Archibald that has dictated the forward line at Tottenham in the same way that Harry Kane does. You know, he has a lot of detractors. You know, he takes a lot of stick. You know, some of it, you know, he brings on himself. But, you know, as forwards go, I don't think Tottenham have had a more influential forward since Steve Archibald. And I put Gary Lineker within that, as in the type of player Gary Lineker was. You know, he was the penalty box poacher. You know, he was deadly in front of goal, but you wouldn't have asked him to kind of like create stuff. You wouldn't have expected him to create stuff. You know, he was, his primary role was to put the ball in the back of the net. And Harry Kane is the type of striker that does so much more than that. You know, he's kind of Tottenham's Alan Shearer in that respect. You know, and there's another player you can throw in that showed a lot of loyalty to the team he supported in Newcastle when, you know, he could have done other things. Never underestimate the loyalty of someone who loves a football club. But yeah, I think Harry Kane is a wonderful, wonderful footballer who I think his legacy will improve with time. You know, he'll be one of those players, as much as he's loved by Tottenham, other fans of other clubs look at him in a slightly different way. I don't think anyone ever doubts his talent, but possibly the personality and that projection, maybe that sense of, you know, there's almost like a sense of greed almost, or, you know, a feeling that he's self-centred, which I think is grossly unfair. But, you know, I think that fans of other teams and football supporters in general will, 5 years, 10 years, 15, 20 years after he's kicked his last ball, scored his last goal, will be turning around and saying, do you know what, he was an astronomical footballer.
It's, I mean, one last question, Tom, I suppose. Has he got the right manager at the moment?
100%, 100%. I'm not going to be like some of these Tottenham fans that every time he scores a goal, they're like, what's Paul Merson said now? Because, you know, it's got nothing to do with that. I think Jose Mourinho, he knows what he wants from his strikers, and he's probably got a perfect Mourinho striker in Kane, but he doesn't. We haven't seen it before because Kane has had to play the Pochettino way, which is so different to what Jose does. I think, like we said, Kane can be what he wants. Kane's very adaptable. He can play in a fast-paced Spurs side under Pochettino and then go to England and be the focal point and allow other people to play off of him. I don't see him as anything different for Spurs, to be honest. I think he's unfairly criticised at times. I think he's fairly criticised as well. Don't get me wrong. As long as he doesn't start claiming goals that don't come off him, I think he's in clear water. But he doesn't help himself at times. I think he's one of these players, and maybe I view it differently because it's my club, and because I see him as, you know, as the song goes, one of our own. Even though I tend not to use that, because you always, anytime you say that, you'll always get sent a picture of him in the Arsenal shirt. It's like, ha ha ha, where'd you find this one? And it's like, if he does leave Spurs, it won't be the same. It's just if he is to win a trophy, and he sincerely deserves to win one, because a player of that quality deserves silverware, it has to be at Spurs. Because it's like, if Steven Gerrard had gone to Chelsea and won those league titles, it wouldn't have meant the same. It wouldn't have been the same kind of, I guess, it would have been, oh yeah, Gerrard's got a trophy there. We would have been like, oh, okay. But if, obviously, it's not intended as a dig towards Gerrard, but if he had won something, if he had won the Premier League at Liverpool, it would have meant 10 times more than it would have done anywhere else. And I think that's the same with players like Paul Scholes, Ryan Giggs, Alan Shearer. I know he won the Premier League at Blackburn, but if he was to win something with Newcastle, if he'd have won the league with that Newcastle side, that would have been 10 times better than what he did with Blackburn, because it was his club. And I think the same applies to Harry Kane. But if he was to go to another club, if he was to go to Manchester United and they won the league, he would be just another player for a good title-winning side. If he was to win the league for Spurs, hopefully that day comes. I don't think it will, but you can live in hope. But if he brings home silverware for us, I think it will just... I hate this saying, because it just sounds so hokey and it sounds so kind of meaningless now. But it would mean more to him at Spurs because that's the club he's been with. That's the club that he spent his career with. He grew up in the academy with. I know footballers say this all the time, but he supported the club when he was a child. I hope for his sake he isn't a Robbie Keane where he's got 12 different shirts by the time he's 12. But you're going to take him at face value and kind of go, okay, he seems like he's legit about it. So you just want, I think he's, in an era where loyalty in football seems to be at a minimum, he seems to be the glue that's holding people's hopes together in terms of I'm speaking from a different perspective from anybody else, but you kind of look at him and go, I hope you don't win a trophy at Real Madrid. I hope you win the trophy at Tottenham, because it would be better for his legacy to be the one to lead Tottenham to that title or whatever it may be. And I think he's what Tottenham fans look at, go, no matter how badly they play, no matter what run of form they're on, if you see Harry Kane starting, and if you've seen Harry Kane shooting at the edge of the box, you know it's going to be all right. You know there's going to be something good happening that day. Because I'll finish on this one. I remember working for the particular radio station that I work for now. I was doing the social media coverage of Tottenham versus West Ham, or West Ham versus Tottenham. Actually, no, I did both games, to be fair, and he scored in both. But the West Ham-Tottenham one at London Stadium was Jose Mourinho's first game. All the attention of the football world was on the dugout, and Harry Kane played a blinder. He played an absolute blinder, but everybody mentioned Dele Alli. And I think that's typical of what Spurs is that Harry Kane can do anything in that forward line. He can be the poacher. He can be the match winner. He can be the link-up man. He's not particularly quick, but he's quick. He's not particularly strong, but he can hold off defenders. He can do whatever he wants. And even though he hasn't played that much this season, to be fair, not many people have played that much this season, or it feels like it anyway. He's still got 20 plus goals, I think it is. And it's like, I think that sums him up. There was a period in time where he was out for the season and he still ended up with 20 plus goals because he's just that damn good.
It's been a wonderful chat, Tom. And it's great to, all these are always so good to listen to because of the passion that's engendered by the guests for their players. You know, not only is it their team, but it's also the players that mean the most to them. It's a question I now ask. If you need one player to sum up, and it can be within your criteria, it can be anyone you want, but if you need a player to sum up Tottenham Hotspur, be it from your perspective, that you've seen, your love of the game, who is your Mr. Tottenham Hotspur?
It has to be the great man himself, number 26, Glenby King, because not only is he a fantastic player, I also think his career path is very Spursy, where we've spent an hour and 15 minutes nearly, an hour and 10 minutes talking about what could have been and how, if things had turned out differently, Tottenham could have won a title. They could have won a Champions League seat last season. They could have won a league title against Leicester, could have won a league title against Chelsea. And I think you look at Ledley King's career and you go, everybody loves him. Everybody appreciates that he's a top player. But everybody will look at it and go, what could have been? If only this thing hadn't have happened, he would have done this. If he didn't have that injury, he could have gone to this club. And I think in a sad, kind of tragic way, it's fitting that he is Tottenham and his career path is very Tottenham. And I don't mean that as a compliment, and I don't mean that as a good thing. But I'm glad it's him that did it. Because you do look at him and go, we've all said he's a wonderful player that could have been at the top. And we said as well, this Tottenham team, they had the potential to win a trophy, whether that be a couple of years ago, a league title, last season, the Champions League, or whatever. They had the potential to do it. But for whatever reason, they fell short and they weren't able to fulfil that potential. And I think you look at Ledley King and you will say he was a wonderful player, but there'll always be a little caveat at the end of what could have been. And I think that question, what could have been, is about is probably the most Tottenham question you could ever ask. What could have been? But I think that's why he sums up Spurs. And because he was an incredible defender that everybody loved.
Perfect. Gary, enjoyed it?
Yeah, I think that was a brilliant summary there. Tottenham are a club that's come so close so many times and just missed out. And, what could have been, what should have been, what would have been if things had been slightly different. And, the career of Ledley King is almost like a microcosm of Tottenham's... how close they've come and just fell short, and they could have been better and should have been. But yeah, a great chat. Looking back, even sort of, with the criteria that Tom's selected to choose his players from, there's still been plenty to discuss, and and just celebrating some of the, you know, great Tottenham players of recent years. So great fun. And I'll get the chisel out and I'll get to blooming work again.
That's never a man with rest, is it? Stephen, interesting. Good that it was a more contemporary view tonight.
Yes, and I think all of Tom's choices, you know, given his parameters, they're all the perfect choices. You know, there isn't a single player that I can think of that should have usurped them within Tom's remit.
Tell you what, I don't come any better than that, Tom. We've had all sorts of fights on here in previous episodes.
I think it's because you know, everybody, they won't admit it, but everybody deep down loves Spurs. It's usually everybody's second favourite team. They can deny it all they want, but in my head, I'll believe it, which makes it true.
Just one thing, Tom, if I can, that, you know, if Kane does decide to leave, just send him across to West London, mate. We'll look after him for you, no problem.
Sorry, you cutting out. I didn't hear that last bit. If he leaves, what? Sorry, I didn't hear that. Send him west where?
Like I say, guys, it's been brilliant. Tom, you know, thank you ever so much for bringing your choices, bringing your chat, bringing a certain amount of pathos to the conversation as well. Always goes down a treat with me. Thank you. Thank you so much for joining us.
No problem. I always enjoy doing these things.
Guys, obviously, as always, Gary and Stephen, thank you so much.
Very fun, mate, as always.
And we'll be...
Yeah, as always.
We'll be back again with... do you happen to know the next one, Gary? Have you got... Don't have to spoil... No spoilers, but do you know the next one?
Another three more to come, but I'm not quite sure of the order. Do we tell you who the three are, or shall we?
No.
I would say this. There's a successful club, there's a not-so-successful club, and there's a national side.
Oh, excellent. All right, then. Plenty to ponder. Plenty to think about. All that's left for me to say is thank you for watching and please join us again next time on the Mount Rushmore.
Many thanks for joining us today on The Lob, a These Football Times production. For more of our content, check out our award-winning print magazine featuring some of the game's foremost writers, artists and photographers, exploring areas of the game rarely covered in high-end print. For now, we look forward to you joining us again soon.